1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RT.ie is the simple email from anywhere in the world, including Japan. But we're not going to, and hopefully nobody will try and contact Kelly over the next few days because she's so busy. But this is what Kelly said this morning after a victory when she was talking to Joe Stack.
While I'm here, sorry, just a big shout out to Anna Moore. She's one of the mammies of Irish women's boxing, and she's been there from the start, and she's always sending her love to everybody. So I want to shout out to Anna Moore.
And a shout out to Anna Moore. Anna Moore, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You're one, what does Kelly describe, one of the mammies of Irish boxing?
Yeah, they call me their mammy.
Their mammy. Okay, and who are you, Anna?
My name is Anna Moore, and I come from Limerick.
What was your reaction when you heard Katie shout out your name?
I was after watching the contest, so I was on a high.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I just hear my name coming out. I was shocked because, if you think of it, Joe, she was after coming out of the ring, winning a silver medal, going for gold.
Yeah.
And she actually thought of me.
Just a big shout out to Anna Moore. She's one of the mammies of Irish women's boxing, and she's been there from the start, and she's always sending her love to everybody, so I want to shout out to Anna Moore.
So you've been there from the start, Anna. Tell us how you first became involved in boxing.
Well, when I started going with my husband when I was 16, he was a boxer. And years later, he went back to the club as a coach, and my sons, he won two Irish boxing titles when he was young.
Okay.
And then my sons took it up. So when my sons were old enough, my husband stepped back. So I decided, I'm not a sit-at-home person, so I decided, well, I'll get involved as well. So I started doing the tees and the doors, and I progressed from there to do my coaches, and I went on from there to do judging, and I done international world body judging. And then when the girls were good enough, they started in 2000, end of 2001-2. When they were good enough and we had them to the standard of where they could go and box internationally, I was asked to come on board as one of the managers.
Fantastic. And Anna, have you ever boxed?
No, but I would have loved it if it was there when I was young.
Okay.
It wasn't there. Before, about 2 years before women's boxing was allowed, the medical board wouldn't allow it.
Oh, would they not?
They said it wasn't safe. But the minute that they approved it, our president at the time, Dominic O'Rourke, who is also our president now, and our central council, which runs the boxing, they immediately got on board to get a woman from each province to go on this committee so that we could start up doing competitions and eventually championships for these boxers.
And when you went from doing the door, making the tea or the sandwiches, how did you go from there into the ring almost as a referee and a judge?
Well, I didn't do referee, Joe.
Okay.
I done judging.
Okay.
And it was so funny because the way I got into judging was Limerick were boxing Dublin.
Okay.
And I was sitting alongside who was the president of my club, St. Francis.
Yeah,
and
Limerick,
I could do that. And he said, all right, he said. And he gave me papers to sit down and, you know, do it mock. And I got a lot of them right. So when I came home, I said to my husband, I'd like to do that. So he gave me this, wrote all this out and said, there you are. That's what you'd have to do in a test. Do it.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't a clue. A lot of people would think all you've got to do is sit down, look at a fight and mark it. No, we've got a rule book and you have to know that rule book from cover to cover. And I sat and I'd done a test for 2.5 hours, a written test.
Good woman. Well done.
Now they don't do the written test. Well, they do a written test now, but it's multiple choice questions.
Okay.
At that stage, you actually had to write everything down.
Wow. So you're now a judge. And are you? How did you come across Kelly? Or how did Kelly come across you?
As I said, I'd been involved in the women's and the girls' boxing. The first time we ran one competition in Dublin, there was a lady, Sadie Duffy from Buncrana. She's a referee judge, world body, Sadie is.
Okay.
She and Sadie and myself, we ran the first competition, and we couldn't even match the weight. So we gave 1 year for one weight, and we actually matched up 12 contests. That's how we started.
Okay.
That's how we started, yeah. So, and as I said, we went down with female boxing from there.
And then when did you meet Kelly?
Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon.
No, it's fine. We're moving. You're answering the questions.
I do. Yeah. I beg your pardon, yeah. Joe. We would be weighing the girls in for their championships.
Okay.
And that's how you get to know all the girls. They come in to us and we're talking to them. You're putting them at ease because sometimes their first time coming in and they have to go down to their underwear when they're weighing in. And when you're 11 up, it's embarrassing for them, you know.
Yeah.
So we just tried to put them at their ease when they come in. And there was just something about Kelly. There was always something about Kelly that just, she holds a very special place in my heart.
Yeah. And even watching her and her reaction to the victory this morning, she is modest.
Kelly Harrington never thinks of herself. She thinks of everybody else before she thinks of herself. And Kelly could have done this years ago, but she wasn't in the right frame of mind. She wasn't ready for it.
Okay.
But when she was ready, the wind started to come. In 2008, her first, I have a beautiful picture, and I love it, when she got to the final of the World Championship in 2016. And I'm inside in the dressing room plaiting her hair for her.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful photograph, Joe. Yeah. It's one of the nicest ones I like, you know. And she sat there, and if you saw this picture, she just had this big smile on her face, and she was going in to box for a world title, you know. But she's just such... I can't explain. Everybody in boxing, everyone that knows Kelly will tell you the very same thing. She's very humble. Very.
And
but she is a brilliant boxer.
And you watched the fight?
I did. I couldn't go to sleep.
Yeah,
I went to sleep at 2 o'clock and I woke at 3 and I woke at 4. So I just got up at that stage.
Okay.
So my nerves were at me. My stomach was in knots. My daughter got up, so we watched it together. And she had a brilliant first round.
Yeah.
And I couldn't understand how the five judges didn't give her the first round, you know?
Yeah.
The second round was very iffy.
Yeah.
And the third round, when I saw her come out for the third round in the first minute, I said, she has it.
Why? How did you come to that conclusion? Just by looking at her?
Pardon?
Just by looking at her, you knew.
Oh, you know what they're landing. You see, some people will see some boxer throwing maybe 10 punches.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe only two of those would land.
Okay.
Now, Kelly might throw 3 punches, but the 3 of those could land.
Ah.
You know, so it's not how many punches you throw, it's how many land on the target area.
So were you when you were watching Kelly this morning, would you kind of got your judge's hat on? Anna?
Oh, you would have. Would have your judge's hat when you were watching it. You definitely would.
Sunday.
Oh. I'd be having a brandy Sunday morning at 6 o'clock. I hadn't any this morning, but I'll make sure I have one for Sunday morning.
Will you at least put in do a brandy egg flip or something to try and settle your tummy?
But I'll tell you something, Joe.
Yeah.
Whether she wins or she loses, I think she can win. But if she doesn't, it doesn't matter. She is a silver medalist. She medalled at her very first Olympics.
Incredible.
And how proud we all are. But then, can I just mention Aidan Walsh? Because Aidan got a bronze medal. Yeah.
And his sister.
You know. And he'd say, Michaela. Michaela is a beautiful girl.
And all our boxers.
We're so lucky in our boxing, Joe. We have a conveyor belt of brilliant girls coming up.
Have we? Okay.
We have.
And how do you, Anna, is there, how do you console somebody who loses?
Oh, Joe, as Kelly said to me, I went out to meet him. I've never missed the airport.
Good woman.
Since the girls started going away.
Yeah.
I'm always there for them. I'm there if they lose to console them. And I'm there to hug them when they win. But when we go to competitions, when they come out of the ring, if they lost, I'd be consoling them.
Okay.
You know, you put your arms around them and just let them cry or whatever they want to do. When they win, it's with joy.
Yeah.
I'd be crying myself with joy. You know, and other times they could be in their rooms. Like one time Kelly got sick and the girls come running for me. So I had to look after Kelly being sick. You know, We're like a family. You're like a family when you go away with, when I go away with the Boxers, they're my family.
Yeah.
I have to look after them to the best of my ability. And that's what I tried to do.
And was there a possibility you could have been in Japan?
No, not. I would have been. I've been to London. I've been to Rio, but I went on my own expense. And I would.
Oh, did you? Well done.
And I would have went to Japan too. And I wouldn't. Yeah. I'd have got a GoFund up, Joe.
Yeah, but the problem. We were saying that this morning when we were talking about you, and Sian, who was talking to you, was so enthusiastic about you. We said it's a great pity the Olympics are so far away, and two, in a pandemic, because I have no doubt it's now 3 minutes to two. I've no doubt after hearing you for 12 minutes, somebody would phone in and say, I want Anna to go to Japan, but you can't, unfortunately.
Wouldn't I love it, Joe?
What will Kelly be doing between, what would you advise her to do between now and Sunday morning?
Well, what Kelly would do straight away after, she'll go back to her room, back to her hotel, she'll have something to eat, and she'll rest.
Okay.
She'll rest. I sent her a message actually, and I said, "Kelly, rest yourself. Make sure you have a good rest."
And when she go for a swim, or how do you?
I don't know whether there is a pool. I don't know what the village is like. And sometimes swimming isn't good for boxers, you know.
Oh, is it not?
But I don't know what about we say elite boxers. But I know some of our younger ones. Okay. If we're away, we don't let them into the pools. No.
But is there any point in Kelly doing more training between now and Sunday morning?
She'll do light training.
Okay.
That Czar and John Connellan and Deemer, they will now look at the contest
between the Brazilian girl,
and they'll dissect that. And as John Connellan said this morning, Aaron Kelly said, it was Eric Donovan on the television said, Czar is a great tactician, and he will be able to tell Kelly how she should box this girl. And Kelly is very, very good for taking direction.
Oh, is she? Okay. Even though
it's not even taking the direction. Yeah. It's how she applies it. She can apply it, Joe, you know.
But at one stage, she said this morning, after the bout, when she was asked, like, what do you think swung it for? She just said, I can't remember. Just when you go out there, I presume you get into the zone and you just do
what's in
your DNA in your training.
Yeah, I remember they'd say to me, or I would say to maybe one of the girls or whoever would be there, or even my own club if I had someone boxing, you put one person there and you tell them to listen for that voice.
Okay.
If you need instructions to go to the boxer, they might hear that voice. More than often, they'll tell you they hear nothing.
But will it make a difference, Anna, that for Kelly, and you've been with her so often, that there's no crowd there, there's no family, there's no friends? Look at the atmosphere. I drive through it every morning, and it's been there for a long time. It's not just this week. Up around Portland Row, Sheriff Street, Summerhill. It's a light and a blaze with incredible...
To Emmett
Brennan and to Kelly now, two locals. How do we transport that to Japan?
I don't know. I think Kelly herself at the moment, she's come off social media and everything.
Good woman.
They all do.
Yeah,
they all come off until afterwards, because they have to focus. And if they have, if they go on, and as Kelly said herself yesterday on something I was reading, like someone come on and say, oh, that girl, you're boxing next, she's great, her hands are very long, and you know, these kind of things, and negative things, but people don't mean to be negative.
Yeah,
and they don't need to be listening or looking at that. So they completely go off social media.
Yeah. And do you know how Kelly would relax? Does she watch movies or music or
they'd watch. I know when we used to be away, when we were in Kazakhstan at the Worlds now in different places, they'd have Netflix or something,
great.
Have them on their iPads, you know?
Okay.
Or on their computers, because they showed me in Holland or somewhere how to put it on my computer.
So, Anna, what do you want to say to Kelly?
I just want to tell Kelly I love her so much, but she knows that. She knows, and all the girls...
You love her. You love her.
Oh, I do. I do love Kelly, and I love all the girls, and I love boxing. My heart is in boxing, and I really do, Joe. It's my sport, and I love it. And you see those girls?
Yeah.
I've been with them, not just Kelly, all of them. They've come up through the ranks, and I've watched them, and I've seen them improve, and I've seen them progress. I've seen them leave as well, and sad to see yeah. some of them leave, you know. But they'll always be my girls, Joe. Always.
That's fantastic. Yeah, fantastic, Anna. But Anna, you know the way you told me at the start that female boxing wasn't allowed.
No.
You'd still get some people saying, well, it's too rough.
Well, I'll tell you, when it started, I wasn't too enthusiastic about it either, Joe. Okay. I'll be honest about it. Yeah. And you see, when clubs started taking girls into their clubs, they had to be very, very careful. You know, if you hadn't, we say, a female coach in there.
Oh, of course, yeah, I understand that.
You know,
yeah,
child
yeah.
protection, yeah, you had to
absolutely.
Be very careful.
Yeah, yeah.
So that meant that they had to go away and either get a parent to stay there the whole time or to train somebody up as a female coach. Now, we're very lucky now. We have great female coaches around Ireland. Now we have. But then the expense of it then, you had to get special dressing rooms.
Yeah, of course.
Girls,
good point. Yeah, yeah.
You know, even in the stadium, in the beginning,
bathrooms,
for the first two
everything.
Or three
yeah,
years,
yeah.
We had no dressing rooms. They had to get changed in the toilets. But thank God, as I said, our council has always been behind female boxing, and they have done everything they can to improve female boxing. But we have great youths and juniors. Our youths that are coming up will be every bit as good, please God, as Kelly, and they're our next Olympians, and they have to be, we have to treat them properly to keep them.
Okay. I asked you what Kelly would have done after the bout this morning. What did you do?
What did I do?
Yeah.
When I was watching what she was saying about me, I sat down crying.
Okay.
I cried, and I didn't just cry, I was screaming crying.
Yeah.
To think that she thought, after coming out winning that contest, that she thought enough of me.
While I'm here, sorry, just a big shout out to Anna Moore. She's one of the mammies of Irish women's boxing, and she's been there from the start, and she's always sending her love to everybody, so I want to shout out to Anna Moore.
Completely unprompted, Kelly broke into that, and this is Anna Moore on the other line. And you were screaming, crying.
I was, Joe, I was.
Okay.
That she thought enough of me, you know.
Of course. And what did you do next?
Next, what did I do? I hadn't time. I was getting messages from everybody, Joe.
Okay.
I was getting phone calls from everybody. It was like I was a celebrity, which I'm not. I'm just an ordinary person.
Yeah. But you went to Mass.
Oh, I went to Mass. Oh, I did, to thank God, because I had asked him yesterday to make sure Kelly won. So I went up to thank him and give him a few bob this morning.
So, What did you intone to God yesterday? Please, did you say, please let her be safe? Or that's a given?
I asked God to keep Kelly safe in the ring and to bring her to victory.
Okay. And will you do the same on Saturday evening?
Oh, I will, of course. I've done it again this morning. I'll do it again tomorrow morning.
And what church do you go to?
St. Bridget's.
Okay. And then
Tomorrow I'll be going up to the Redemptress to Our Lady's Novena. So that's another one.
And is that a special one you're invoking?
Oh, that's a special novena. I'd be putting a few bob in and lighting the candles.
You're going for gold tomorrow.
Kelly's going for gold.
I know, but you are as well in terms of, God, you're trying to impress and the powers that be, so to speak, to do their best for Kelly.
Yeah.
Okay. She does deserve it. I spoke to her before, and it was a good few years ago. She was working in a psychiatric hospital.
She is.
In Dublin, not too far from where she lived. And
you know, Joe, when the pandemic started and we were all stuck at home, Kelly came on and she had this in the morning time. She'd have us all doing exercise. She'd be doing exercise and we'd be watching her and we'd be copying her doing it.
On Zoom,
And in her, where she lives, she went to the park there and she had the people there. She was doing it with them as well.
Yeah.
And in the hospital, she had them doing it as well. So she's just a great person for everybody. And those people in that hospital she works in, she loves them, Joe. She loves them and she loves her job.
And it's a lovely unit. It's a lovely... I know it's a hospital in terms of people being inpatient, but it's a lovely home away from home for people who are unwell. So it's a great place there, up in Fairview. Anna, thanks again.
Congratulations
again. You're down to earth, and I can understand why Kelly called you out. Hopefully. Now, she's done remarkably well. We have and I know this is not enough in terms of Kelly's ability, but she has a silver medal.
Yes.
Her hometown is, which has suffered a lot in the last few years in terms of crime and that inflicted on them. Our home area is a buzz, agog, a light with the enthusiasm for her. She's given so many people a lift. I hope she realises that. And through you as well, in your work, you've given so many people a lift.
Thank you.
And I'm sure you're, as you say, you loved the girls, as you called them. And I'm sure they love Anna Moore back. So, Anna, you mind yourself over the next few days.
Can I just say,
yes?
You asked me a while ago and I didn't say what I'd like to say to Kelly.
Okay.
I just want to tell Kelly, go into the ring, enjoy it. Because this is the final of the Olympics. And I know she'll come out with a gold medal. And if she doesn't, she's still our hero and she's still our champion.
Anna Moore, you're our champion, you're Kelly's champion. Listen to her.
While I'm here, sorry, just a big shout out to Anna Moore. She's one of the mammies of Irish women's boxing and she's been there from the start and she's always sending her love to everybody. So I want to shout out to Anna Moore.
Anna, God bless you now.
Thank you very much, Joe.
And may all of God's blessings that you intone for others come down to you as well.
Thank you very much. Have a good weekend, Joe.
And you too. And to you and your family and your sons as well, our boxers. Thank you so much for your service.
You're more than welcome.
To the Olympians. Anna Moore from Limerick. Go to Míle Maith agat, Anna.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Another woman who's doing extraordinarily well is Anya Duffy. Anya, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe, how are you?
A different code, so to speak, music. But the reason you've come to our attention is because you've come to the attention of the Irish Examiner, where you have this sign erected on the street where you busk. I'm not allowed to repeat this, say what it is, but you can say what it is.
Are you sure now?
Yes.
I know it's not that bad. No, it's basically these little shows I've been putting on out of a converted donkey box. This old one I converted, and I'm actually getting one of the grants to put on a few performances for the Cork County Council. So they're great. They're great fun.
Okay.
And I was having a few issues with the people interfering with the PA system when I was trying to play, you know. So I was like, how am I going to do it? And it was mostly men, and I didn't want to be trying to say it to them while I was playing in case I came across somewhat rude, you know, and that's not how I want things to be, you know. I love help and I love offering help. So I was saying, how can I do this, you know? How can I do this, you know? They're trying to help, but how can I figure this out? So I had messaged this girl after I played this gig in Alahees, and we were chatting about it. I was saying, I want to find a nice way where I won't get arguments.
And you're saying, the line is not, you're saying that random men, when you're performing, will come up and start twiddling with your amplifier and your microphone stand and your...
Oh, yeah, and in good nature, but at the same time, it's not great when you're up on the stage and you're like, where's the sound of my guitar?
Oh, so what's the sign? What's the sign you put up that did...
So the sign says, please don't touch my knob without consent.
Okay, and have they been doing it without consent?
It worked a treat since I put the sign up. Put it that way.
But why? I'm still baffled on you. Why would a complete stranger come up off the street and start trying to be your roadie or your sound man?
See, their gigs are put on, so there's all people there and they're excited now and they're just trying to help, you know, and they're coming up and down and touching things and they're just trying to help. So the thing is that I don't want to come off like I'm not grateful for help.
No, I know you're grateful. Apart from people trying to become your sound man, and they are men, what other feedback do you get?
From the sign or from I'm playing?
From men, apart from saying you're brilliant, aren't there? You're saying in London a fella followed me home, not to push him away, which is outrageous.
Yeah, it's just a different thing. That's like the easiest part of it. It's a thing in the music industry where there's worse sides to it, just like what we're saying here. You know, you do get an awful lot of, used to lose 10 pounds and used to look up when you're playing the guitar so you won't have a double chin, you know, and there is things that they said to you that, you know, they're not necessarily said. And you can feel unsafe. And I know that, like, those things are dark and they have to be dealt with. But then there's the smaller little things that are like this and they can affect us, but I don't want it to be a negative thing out there because it's just a matter of us learning and growing and having a bit of humour off the old-fashioned way.
What's it been like? I heard Danny O'Reilly of the Coronas on. He's a great spokesperson for the music industry this morning. What's it been like for you and other musicians in the last 18 months, Anya?
It's not easy. I mean, like, it's because when you're a musician, you don't just do this 9 to 5. You're doing this all the time. There's a lot that goes into it. Yeah. And it takes, it's not just your job you've lost. It's a whole sense of yourself. It's your whole character. So people are feeling, they're feeling invaluable. It's really serious, you know. And just a bit of guidance, or if there was like an incentive where there was, you know, more of them played and spoke to, but it's just that there's, you know, there's some giving up, there's people are depressed, and it's just hard to explain. But when it's your whole livelihood, I remember for a while going, if I write a song, it might be depressing, you know, because we're all, you know, and then I'm like, you know, or if I, like, how do you explain what's going on? And there's just still no guidelines whatsoever. So it can make you feel like you're not valuable, that you're not necessary, whereas it's Ireland, music is necessary.
And the electric picnic is gone.
Yeah, so this was another thing to wake up to. And, like, these are all people, there's so many people behind the scenes. It's not just people throwing televisions out the window and rock and roll days, you know. It's not, there's a lot put into it. And this event even alone, that hires people for so long, you know, that feeds the... puts the bread on the table, and then
once
this is gone.
But I heard a radio station recently saying we're running a campaign for Irish music, you know, for Irish art. And I kept saying to myself, well, then play the music.
Exactly.
That's the best way you can campaign for them.
I know, just play it. Don't bother saying anything. Just do it, because we can see by our bank balances what happens. But this money goes back into the economy here, you see.
Yeah, of course
it
does.
We're all support local, and I do that my best. I'll support the local shops, support the local, everything I can.
And who would you admire in the music business, Anya? Who would your influences be?
I have lots, you know. I mean, it goes back from other countries and back. I mean, actually, Roisin Murphy is pretty inspiring for an Irish person, but had to go to England to, you know, to get further. Yeah, but it's still, it, you know, that's the thing where it's hard. I have to travel a lot too. Obviously,
well, you're travelling to the Donerail Arts Festival on the 15th of August.
I'm travelling to the Donerail Arts with the Duff Box.
and the Clonakilty Guitar Festival on
and
the 18th of September. Anya,
so
to you and all your fellow musicians, I really hope you get back up on stage.
Very
and
much
I know,
appreciated.
And fair play and keeping going. Just keep going. That's
thanks
the hard thing.
Very much.
Okay,
very
Anya nice Duffy is in Donerail, 15th of August,
Clonakilty Duffy music.
And Guitar Festival, 18th of September. Thanks indeed, Anya Duffy.
Thank you very much.
Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Trebolgan is a holiday village in East Cork, and going for many a long year. I think it changed ownership, but a great... great reputation, especially for families all in, swimming pools and self-catering and various other things to do on the complex. And there's a caravan park there as well. Now, Valerie Co-op. Valerie, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
What happened?
Well, basically, we've booked with Trebolgan since January 2020.
Okay.
And obviously then with COVID and that, I think we booked for Easter 2020. That didn't go ahead. Then we booked again for Easter 2021, this Easter, and that didn't go ahead. And then as things started, we kept our deposit with them through the whole time in the hope, you know, that we'd eventually get to go.
Mm-hmm.
And as things started looking up this year, we knew that they were open again. So we booked, I think it was in May, myself and two of my sister-in-laws, bringing three families with us. We booked in May for September this year. It was three nights, 17th to 20th of September. And just on Friday, just gone Friday evening, I got a call from a girl in Trebolgan to say that our holiday was being cancelled as they had a special event taking place that was booking out the whole of Trebolgan for the weekend that we were going. So, as you can imagine, I was kind of very confused.
And they've only discovered this now.
Yes. Yeah, and what was very strange is myself and both my sister-in-laws, we got a message on Friday morning. Well, I got one, sorry. My other two sister-in-laws had paid in full. I had just paid the deposit to say that the balance was due to be paid by the 6th of August. And then we got this call on Friday evening. Well, I got the call initially.
And did you explain to us when you made the booking, what do you have to you tell them the number of adults? Many in your group?
In my group, well, there's six in my family, but I had booked a house for eight or nine because I said there was a possibility I was bringing two of my children's friends with me.
Okay, yeah.
And I think my other and sister-in-law, she'd booked a house for eight or nine. Again, she's a family of six, but like that, they were bringing friends. And then my other sister-in-law, she has three kids, but I think she might have booked a house for six because, again, she might have been bringing friends. So we had three houses.
So you booked from the 17th to the 20th of September in Trebolgan.
Yes.
You've
yes.
now been told a month beforehand. You've now been told your booking is cancelled. Sorry.
Yes.
We'll send you back your booking deposit. You did give them
well,
the deposit.
Well, no, they haven't yet because I haven't given them an answer. I was
And they say the reason why we've cancelled it, maybe our listeners can help, is that there's a special event going into Trebolgan between the 17th and the 20th of September. Does anyone know what the special event is?
No, and they haven't told
us. But it's a special event that they're telling you has booked out Trebolgan, so people must know if they're going. I don't know how many people fit into Trebolgan, but people must know if they're going to a special event in Trebolgan between the 17th and 20th of September. If you are, can you please tell us in 1850 715 815 what is a special event?
Yeah.
And now, did you look for any special? You know the way some lodges or houses have accessibility, wheelchair accessible, though everywhere should be wheelchair accessible
now.
Now, you didn't look for anything specific where they said we only have two with this type of accommodation.
No, just that it's one of the houses that's 8 to 9. But as far as I'm aware, they have a good few houses that size. But she did tell me over the phone, because I said it was only her booking that was being cancelled. And she said, no, that anyone who has booked for that weekend, their holiday's been cancelled for this special event. And for the 2 weekends after that, this special event is taking all of Trebolgan.
Yeah, but then that brings you into winter. Brings you into October.
I know.
In
and
Ireland.
It's not only that, as I said, when I contacted you, they're like, it's three families going. It's, you know,
all
my
the
husband
logistics.
Had to get time off work, my sister-in-law's husband, my sister-in-law, and it's just trying to figure out.
I can imagine.
You know,
trying to agree on a date, and then somebody comes back and said, "No, I'm working. I can't get off work that week." Someone else comes back. "No, I have to go to a wedding or a christening or whatever." Have you been there before?
Yes, I've been there. We think it was 2019 that we went, and then, as I say, I'd hope to go back in 2020. And my sister-in-law now, she's especially agreed because she's been going to them since 2012. And kind of goes every year.
Yeah. Have you been able to? We haven't been able. We've been on to them, but they haven't. They say they're too busy, or they're at some event. They can't respond. Maybe it's a special event, but we're trying to find out what is a special event from the 17th to. If you heard, for example, Valerie, that the special event was. Stop me here. The special event was a thank you for frontline workers. Would you? I don't think
it is. My husband is a frontline worker. He's a healthcare assistant in a hospital. He's worked all through the pandemic, as is my sister-in-law's husband is a fireman. And then my other sister-in-law is a frontline worker. And as you can imagine, like, it's been a horrible time for everyone. We were all looking forward to this break. And it just seems so unfair to come back, I think it's 5 weeks beforehand, and say, you're not going.
Yeah, okay. We'll try and get an answer because it is a very popular spot, and they should explain. But maybe our listeners can help us. Are you going to a special event in September in Trebolgan in East Cork? And if so, what is it? And maybe I don't know what would be justifiable to cancel. As I said, when I said frontline workers, it's two of our group are frontline workers. So stay with us, joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Valerie, what have Trebolgan said to you or your sister?
Well, they only spoke to me originally on Friday evening. They rang me at 6:30. Lovely call to get to the bank holiday weekend.
Did they offer you alternative dates?
They offered us alternative dates.
When?
Say in August, which absolutely there's no way will suit because my husband would have to give about a month's notice.
This is August, yeah. This is August.
Time off. So yeah. August was out. And then she possibly may have said earlier in September, but I have a daughter starting first year. Yeah, and that was why we chose, again, going through all the dates between us all, that's why we chose the middle of September, because I would be taking her out of school on a Friday and a Monday. So I wanted to get her settled in.
Yeah, well, apparently some people are saying it's a special needs event.
Okay.
Where does that leave us? Still very short notice to cancel something, so...
Yeah.
So arbitrarily. Anyway, we're trying to find out what is the actual event. But does an event happen with such short notice that means people who've booked, in your case, originally over a year ago?
Yeah, it just seems very unfair.
Are told unceremoniously on a Friday evening, by the way, your holiday is gone.
Yeah. And one of the reasons
it is your holiday.
Yeah.
And it is your staycation because we can't do anything else.
We can't be the only ones that this has happened on. If she said everyone was being cancelled.
Okay.
And I'm sure like ourselves, you often when you're down in Trebolgan, I know the last time I was there, there's always groups of families.
Yeah.
That seem to go, you know, with the cousins and all the rest.
Yeah. Okay. Valerie, thanks. If we hear from Trebolgan, if we hear from... we hear from the anyone else that's there, we will get back to you immediately, Valerie, because it is
it's just devastating on the kids. We're foster parents, my sister-in-law, you know, and we're bringing kids in our care off on holidays and stuff, and they're looking forward to it.
You've told the kids they're going to Trebolgan. And the minute you tell the kids they're going to Trebolgan or Centre Park or whatever else they're going, they talk about little else. They will talk about little else.
They're talking about it constantly.
Yeah. Okay, we'll try and find out, Valerie.
Okay.
Thanks indeed.
Right.
Joe at RT.ie. Siobhan, good afternoon. Back to the ambulance scenario, the emergency ambulance, the 999 ambulance service in Ireland. It's run by Dublin Fire Brigade and then nationally by the National Ambulance Service. Now, your case, Siobhan, you were in the southeast of Ireland. What happened?
Just my uncle had gone into the local clinic just to attend about something to the nurse, and he took ill and collapsed on the floor.
Oh my God! Okay.
So the nurse went to him and rang the ambulance, and we're about 12 miles from the local hospital.
Okay.
Which would only take about 20 to 30 minutes. 30 minutes at the most for an ambulance maybe to get out, and it took 1.5 hours before the ambulance came. So at this stage, unfortunately, they were trying to resuscitate him.
And did they explain why the ambulance took 90 minutes? It obviously wasn't coming from 12 miles away.
No, it wasn't by the looks of it, but I haven't heard any more yet.
I know you're still traumatised, I suspect, are you?
Oh, it was awful what happened. He passed away in the ambulance, that's even before the ambulance took off. They tried everything all right, but it was devastating because one of my relatives was there. And, I mean, his heart stopped in the end.
And were they working on him, given that he was in a medical facility?
Yeah. Yes, they all tried. But I often wonder, Joe, that if the ambulance had come out within the 30 minutes, you know, he could have got maybe heart, didn't could have got anything, could have, maybe something could have worked out for him. And it was just devastating the way he went, because my relative was looking at the medical team, and, you know... They knew that his lungs were filling up, and his heart was giving in. My relative was very distressed looking at him.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. Stay with us, Siobhan. Edward Buckley has contacted us from Cork, a retired firefighter in the fire service in Cork City. Edward, the original call was from Dublin saying the ambulance never turned up for an incident in Stephen's Green, and the two victims had to end up, because no taxi would take them because they were covered in blood. They ended up getting a bus to the A&E unit, or the ED unit as we call them now. And then we got this letter from a paramedic in Cork with the National Ambulance Service saying the situation is in crisis, especially... Yes. What was your... Do Cork Fire Brigade run an emergency ambulance service?
No, not since the 80s.
Okay.
They used up to then, but not now. But what they do run is a cardiac response unit.
Ah, of course.
Which is a very successful unit. But that doesn't transport the patient.
Yeah.
Do you understand? That's just there to... stabilise the patient, the arrival of an ambulance.
So what do you think of the points that were being made by our paramedic? He said the system needs to be updated. He could be in Cork, he could end up over in Limerick, he could end up stuck in Limerick.
That's correct.
What was your experience of it, Edward?
Well, my experience is that sounds quite right, because even though now I'm retired for the past 5 years, I had situations myself where in the city, we would have had to wait for an ambulance, particularly for the likes of road traffic or river rescue, or whatever the case was. We would have been told that there was no ambulance available, and we'd have to wait for one to come from Cantor or Mallow or Waterford or whatever. And even as bad and all as it was, at least we had crews there to sustain the patients and help them until arriving with an ambulance. But I just think what it must be like for... I had to call an ambulance for a relative of mine one time, and every minute seems like an hour, you know. But I think there's a lot of things that have to be looked at. First and foremost, I believe, having worked with interagency units over the years, Guardian, ambulance and fire service and all that kind of stuff, and we did a lot of courses and things. The people today in the emergency service are second to none.
Yeah, I know.
They're brilliant
absolutely.
At their job. Yeah. We have the best equipment in Europe, I believe, the best vehicles, and we have dedicated people doing the job. And what happens, in my view, is that when an ambulance is dispatched to a call, there's a lot of things he has to do. He, first of all, has to get his patient. He has to assess the patient. He might have to, as the fellow said, stay and play with the patient until they take him along or load and go up to the critically injured. But when he gets to the hospital, he has to have all his paperwork ready, and he cannot go off on another call, so to speak, until the patient is taken from him. And that could be quite a while. I know there's problems with the postcodes and this and that and delays, and I've met ambulance crews as far as Waterford, working through in Cork for the day, believe it or not, one day a metro crew. But I think it has to go back to the A&E departments, who do fantastic work, but they're run off their feet.
Well, even in the digital world,
are we
talking paper?
Well, even in the digital world, there's still a lot of work to be done. With the digital flights, there is a lot. And I mean, having worked on the ground like many other people, not just me, when you're out there on the road facing serious situations, and time is critical, we're always told about the golden hour with a patient, and you're out there and you're trying to get your facts and your figures right in the patient's interest, so that when you get to the A&E department, you can hand all that information over to the people in the hospital.
Well, just
take over.
To come at it another way, Edward, are we placing too much faith in a 999 ambulance? In other words, as you say, and Dublin have it as well, an advanced paramedic unit. It's a van or whatever, and it flies around the place. And I think there's three paramedics. But that's not an ambulance. But still, they're treating people on the spot. Isn't that what's critical rather than...
I think it's a very essential service. And what we've introduced, or what the ambulance service have introduced here in the past couple of years, now was a motorcycle unit. And they go out and they stay with the patient and sustain the patient until help arrives to transport the patient to the hospital. And that is vitally important. But again, I have to say, something has to be done, because I have seen ambulance crews frustrated and abused by people because of their delay. A lot of the time, from my experience in the fire service, you go to a situation and they were there with you. We responded simply together. And you might be waiting a couple of minutes, whatever. But I have witnessed periods of a long time waiting for, not as much as maybe in Dublin or the Midlands, but we've had them here. And when you think about it, the golden hour, and time is critical. And I'm very conscious of people who are cardiac arrest or people who suffer respiratory problems or, you know, hemorrhage or whatever the case is. They can't afford to be waiting for an ambulance.
Yeah. I know you retired 5 years from Angus Street or whatever, but did you use, well, Aircode is in 7 years. Did given that there's an ad that's been going on for 3 or 4 years now, when you dial 999, make sure you have your Aircode. But we discovered yesterday there's no emergency vehicle in the Dublin Fire Brigade fleet can directly access Aircode. In other words, they can't tap an Aircode into their screen and it'll bring them to the address. They have to contact base, and I'm sure I could do it here now. Give me an Aircode and I can look it up. But that doesn't help when seconds and minutes are...
No. Well, there's a system in place, and I wouldn't be off favour because I wouldn't be, you know, that expertise with it, you know what I mean? But, I mean, I take you back a bit, if I may. It was the case before that when you phoned your local fire, you know, you're in Dublin, you phoned the fire brigade, you got into Tara Street. Or if you phoned the ambulance service, you got into the ambulance service, you know, which lots of time is the Dublin Fire Brigade.
Yeah.
And the same here in Cork. But then when they changed it, and they, like when you're in Cork here, you know, you phone for the fire brigade, or for the ambulance service, you're going elsewhere, you're going outside the city. And what we lost there lots of time was the local knowledge. And that was vital, I think, where people phoned up and they said they had a fire in such a place, that there's an accident in such a place. The local knowledge was vital. Now, I know things improve and it's great to see them improving.
Well, the thing that's changed in the last 18 months is that most people, because they're being asked for, so most people now know their air code.
They do, as we heard yesterday
on the programme. They now know. They can rattle it off, same way as they can rattle off their date of birth.
But it doesn't seem to be, and I'm not critical of the service because I think it's a wonderful service.
They're
incredibly, the people, the dedication and the knowledge that they have. But I mean, they're suffering. They're getting the brunt of this in a lot
of
cases.
That's a very good point.
And I have seen that. And I think the system needs to be looked at. And I think the one thing that they could do is when they take an emergency case to the A&E department, they have to stay there until the patient is taken from them. And there could be an accident on the road where they cannot respond. And that is something that has to be looked at. Triage needs to be probably more... There's only two A&E departments here in Cork, where there used to be three, and one time there was four, and they've cut it down to two. And that has a knock-on effect as well.
Okay.
And I think that I'm not at all surprised when I hear of an ambulance having to come from West Cork, North Cork, East Cork. I've seen it and I've been waiting for it myself in the course of my work. But again, as I said, you know, there's an awful lot expected of ambulance crews.
Yeah.
And when you see this, the public are being left, short.
Well, we have the calls, and we've been listening to them.
Yes,
okay.
It's very worrying, but you know, it should be looked at.
Okay, Edward, thanks indeed. Thanks for your service. That's Edward Buckley, who we put into 5 years ago after 42 years service with Cork Fire Brigade. A great service down there. Based, I know they have a couple of stations as well, but based in that magnificent station in Anglesey Street, the friendliest people in the country. Siobhan, thank you again. I'm so sorry about your uncle. I presume, I don't know whether you're going to take it forward and find out what happened, or do you think at the end of the day it might not have made a difference?
It could have made a difference. An hour and a half could make it when it happened.
That's the what if, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think. Can I just say a quick word, Joe? It's about one of my grandmothers took ill back in around 85. We're going back to the 1980s, right? We didn't have any air codes, right?
Yeah.
And she was around 81 and took bad twice, right? Now, I'm nearly sure that ambulances came out when she took bad, right? Now, the ambulance got her straight into hospital.
Right.
Straight away. There was no 1.5 hours. Mm. There was no air code. They just came out, got on with it, and I think she lived for another 8 months after that.
Okay. Well, the world has changed since then and in terms of population. But Siobhan, thanks indeed. That's Siobhan, and condolences again. Kirsten Ward. Kirsten, we're looking for dentists in Portlaoise, Mount Medic and Tullamore. Why? What's happened to your 81-year-old mother?
Well, basically, she's been over a week trying to get a dentist, so she's kind of in an awful lot of pain.
Wow.
We think, I'm not sure if it's an abscess or what it is, but we think that she probably needs an extraction. She has now got neuralgia, so her whole face is throbbing and paining her.
Oh my God!
And it's really awful because for the whole week we're trying to get a dentist to see her, and it's absolutely impossible.
As an emergency,
like, you know, and the worst part of it is she's on blood thinners because she has heart failure.
Okay.
She's stopping her blood thinners because she thinks she needs an extraction. So she's trying to hold off on the blood thinners in the hope that somebody will take her to extract the tooth. But
painkillers.
And she's, well, you see, again, because of all her other medications and her health history, that
there's nothing
really
worse.
Careful, no, like,
81
what
years of age
take.
And a horrific tooth pain. She thinks she needs an extraction. Is there, can you go to A&E?
So, no, seemingly what's happened is, right, I've rang, and so has my mum, between us, we've rang about 17 dentists around the area. So she's in Port Leash, but we've kind of rang all around the area. And we got to Tullamore, and they actually thought that the dental hospital might be able to help there. But they only see children, minors. They don't look after adults. Mm. So they gave me a load of more numbers, and we rang them all.
And because I really want to try and get a dentist before... we're off to you. Where are you based, Kristen? Where's your mother based?
Mum is based in Port Leash.
Okay.
In Port Leash.
And where would you be prepared to travel to?
To be honest, anywhere at this stage. It's got to the stage where my brother actually, because he needed a while back, he needed an emergency dentist, and he literally was able to get one the same day in Cork. So, but I mean, obviously
would you travel to Dublin?
Oh, absolutely. Like, we'll go wherever we can get her treated.
Well, the motorway now. Okay, so we're lucky.
Yeah,
we're lucky. And has she a file with a dentist? Do you follow me?
Yeah. You see, this is it. This is what we don't understand. So she's with two dentists. One that she would have seen, basically, to do with her teeth. And then she had, I think, one... that she was seeing also to do with some false teeth that she had.
Okay.
And she, so basically, neither of them can take her. The soonest appointment I got was the 31st of August.
And did you, you did explain, the woman is 81 and she's in terrible pain. She has a heart condition, so she's after pulling herself, don't know whether she's after pulling herself off the warfarin because she thinks she needs an extraction and she wants to get it ASAP. And you're saying the earliest she's been told is the end of this month.
Yes, the last day, 31st of August.
And she's already gone through a week of this.
Exactly. And that was actually by saying to them that she was going to go private. I mean, obviously, because she's 81, she has a medical card. But we actually said, look, we tried everybody, even privately. We thought, well, maybe it's because it's the medical card. So we tried privately and they still won't see her. So I just don't understand.
So is there any dentist listening? Well, Port Leash is much closer to Dublin than it is to Galway. But anyone in dentists in the Midlands, or indeed in Dublin, that would treat this 81-year-old lady who is in terrible pain, has been, there's nothing worse than a tooth pain.
Yeah, yeah.
And at that age, and she can't take painkillers because of other medical conditions. Now, did the dentist who said we can't take her say, oh, that's too complicated for us?
No. She I've been told, every single dentist more or less has said to me, number one, at the start it was they don't take medical card patients. Mm. Then when we said we'd go private, it was they're not taking any new patients. So it's basically you just cannot get a dentist for some reason around Port Leash. So I've no idea why. I really don't. And they're either not answering or else they'll answer and say they can't take her.
And how is she today?
Well, she's not good. I mean, you know, she can't sleep or anything. She's in so much pain. It's ridiculous, you know.
She can't sleep. Is there anything that gives her relief? Can she?
She can take paracetamol, but she's very nervous. She's literally taken one pain relief.
Poor woman.
One tablet's all she's taken, and that was last night. It was so bad, she just took one tablet. But she's just afraid, you see, because she's on so many other... you know, she's on other medications, so she's nervous of what to take.
What about her GP?
Well, I don't know. I don't think that they do teach.
No,
so
they don't. But
but
he or she might say, well, I'll give you antibiotics or whatever to try and get...
Yeah, I haven't called the GP. To be honest, I haven't called the GP. I did ring, as I said, the hospitals hoping that maybe they don't take. Do it there. But they were saying they only take children, they don't take adults. Actually, some of the people I spoke to were so lovely, in fairness. They really were. Some of them were really nice. But one of them actually told her that she should ring 999. That's what she was told. And then everyone else was saying, oh, my God, that is terrible. She should definitely not ring 999. She'll be in trouble herself if she does that, because it's a tooth, you know, it's a toothache. It's not like a road traffic accident or anything. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, but I still think if an 81-year-old lady is in deep distress for a week that has underlying health issues, and the distress is caused by the unending pain from a tooth, and she thinks now she's developing an abscess, like, that's not good news.
No, it's not. No, absolutely not. I just don't understand it, because actually in Cork, it's different in Cork. You can, my brother's down there, and he had no problem a few months ago getting an emergency dentist when he needed one.
Shout out again. I'm saying it. Any dentist, Portlaoise, Dublin, that will do as an emergency, see this 81-year-old woman who's been in excruciating pain for a week, even assess her and try and work out a plan. If you would contact us on joe@rt.ie, 1850 715 815, or 51551 is our text number. Leave it with us, Kristen. You're doing your best, and your poor, poor mother. There's nothing worse at that age. Okay, Kristen,
I really appreciate your help.
Thanks for contacting us. Margaret, good afternoon. Margaret, you're in Carlow, and what's the problem down there?
Well, just telling you, my mum is 88 years old, and she fell 2 weeks ago and didn't know for 9 days that she had a broken leg, because she wasn't sent T&E. The care doc said it wasn't broken, but leave that out of it. We've been looking since last Tuesday week. When we discovered Monday it was broken, we rang looking for a wheelchair. The head nurse can't do that, so we got onto occupational therapy. Mm-hmm. And I asked for one for last Wednesday, because we had a wedding Thursday. She wasn't well enough to go anyway because she was in too much pain. But up to yesterday, we still hadn't received any word. I rang occupational therapy in Carlow again yesterday, or left a message, and they rang me back yesterday. And I was basically told that she's on a waiting list to be assessed, and that could be up to 6 weeks. And I said, but this is not just an elderly person waiting to be assessed to see, do they need a wheelchair? This is an emergency, an 88-year-old who fell. And I was basically told that the resources are cut, their staff, they're understaffed.
But what happens, wheelchairs, when people are finished with them? Do they go back?
Don't ask me, Joe, because I actually picked up a commode in the centre in Carlow here. The health nurse got me that for to have in the room at night, that she didn't have to be walking down to the toilet. And I just said it to the guy up there. He said, look, we're listening to it every day of the week. I said, I'm just looking for a wheelchair, really and truly. I said, it'll be short term, but I can't get one, and I can't. He said, look, we're listening to it every day. He said, it is a disgrace, but they can do nothing. They can only hand out when they get the request form. But it was basically told yesterday that it can be passed on, and the grievance can be passed on to the manager, but that at the minute, even if she was on priority one, she still would have a wait. So why I'm ringing today is, we have looked after my mum. Our local priest has got a loan of a wheelchair for her that we were able to have it for. She had to go to the hospital this morning, so we needed one today urgently. But our local priest got us a loan of one. That's gone back now.
Okay. I read the story. A while ago, somebody was walking by a rehabilitation hospital in Ireland, and they saw out the back a skip, which was full of, among other things, crutches, and I think wheelchairs as well. Yes. And they wanted some charity that sends crutches and wheelchairs to Africa. When we contacted the HSE, the HSE said, we don't talk about individual wheelchairs or crutches.
Typical, they don't talk about anything. But when I was up in the centre last week getting the commode, the guy said to me, do you see those wheelchairs over there? He said, they're going to the bin.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if there's anything wrong with them.
Well, let's find out in Carlow. Yeah. Anyone wheelchairs in Carlow. Okay, so Margaret.
The reason I'm ringing, Joe, just the reason I'm ringing is we're looking after my mum here. She needed 24/7 care. We haven't got any home help in yet, or we couldn't get the wheelchair. We've been doing it ourselves. But apart from that, my mum is lucky. She has four children. Just plenty of people out there with nobody, and they will be left on their own. It's for the people. Please, please. Somebody wake up and say these things are emergencies. They're not on lists.
Okay.
That's all I want to say.
Okay, Margaret.
Thank you.
Please God. Yeah, thanks indeed. By the way, back to the Trebalgan story and Valerie and her booking for the 17th to the 20th September, which she made well over a year ago for two houses and three or four families indeed in her extended group. They worked out the date that they were all available was 17th, 20th September. The St. Joseph's Foundation in Cork have confirmed that they have booked 160 houses in Trebalgan for 400 people with disabilities. The weekend is Friday the 24th and the following two weekends. This has been booked for months. But Valerie's weekend that's been cancelled is the 17th to the 20th of September.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Peter McCarthy. Peter, good afternoon. It happened. It wasn't a scene from the field, the movie, the Jim Sheridan wonderful movie where the cattle come off. We were told, by the way, no cattle were harmed in the making of the movie, where the cattle pile over the cliff in Kerry. But that's what happened on Sunday. What the cow jumped over the...
Wasn't the moon, no.
Okay. Near Dingle Bay.
Yeah, we were fishing down in we were out in a boat off a place called Coonanna.
Okay.
Near Carasivine. And we were out for a fair bit now, and we got a phone call from a friend of ours, George McCullough.
Formerly of Glasnevin, yeah.
Yes, that's the same guy, yeah. And he has a bit of a Northern Ireland accent, you know.
Okay.
And he rings us and he says, could we come in and assist the rescue? He said a car, but went over the cliff.
Okay.
We thought he said a car, so we were assuming somebody's in a car. And he went in, and the small little boat with two guys went out, and he had a little put engine, and the cow had fallen off the cliff into the sea and swam towards the shore, but it's all cliffs.
But Peter, when he fell off the cow fell off the cliff, did he land on land or in the sea?
Well, we didn't see him fall. He landed in the sea.
Okay.
Right down the cliff and into the sea. But then he swam into a cave.
Okay.
And he went right up the cave because the tide was out, and he plunked himself up on a rock. And these two guys came out in a small little boat, and they reversed into the cave, and they put a halter around him.
Okay.
So he could hang around his head. And they were trying to pull him off the rock, but he wasn't having any of it. So we reversed our boat eventually into the cave, and had to push it off with an oar on each side. It was funny, like, really, you know. And then we threw a rope onto their boat, and they had a rope from their boat onto the cow.
Okay.
A bullock. It's a bullock, it's not the valley, anyway, it was like a train coming out of the...
One boat pulling another boat pulling a cow.
Yeah. And we got back into the harbour anyway, and he jumped up on the rocks there, and over a little ditch and into the field on the bottom of him.
Incredible.
It all ended up good, yeah.
And it was up. But do you know much about cattle yourself, Peter? Have you a farming background?
Well, you know absolutely nothing about them. all I know, it was a bullock because I had
no bullock, milk. Okay, no milk. Okay, fair play to you. And your boat was powerful enough to Hauled the. I didn't know cows could swim.
Well, there you go, either did we.
Though then again, if you look at old footage of how on the Aran Islands, or indeed any other island, used to get cattle off the island before cranes, they used to row out in the currocks, and the two lads at the back would be holding the cow on a halter, and the cow would be swimming through the sea.
That's what they're doing, yeah.
Incredible.
We got it back into Coonanna Harbour anyway.
So if there was swimming in the cow Olympics, this fella be up there, wouldn't he?
after doing the high dive as well.
He'd be in the pentathlon. He did the high jump. And then,
we caught a lot of things out fishing, but never a cow.
He did the high jump, he did the diving, and he did the swimming. And he did his caving in the Olympics now. Climbing is in the Olympics and exactly, skateboard. Yeah. Okay, well done, Peter. Will you stick to the fish?
And it wasn't Red Bulls we had after either, I can tell you.
Did you? Okay. A glass of milk, I hope. Okay, fair play, Peter. That's Peter McCarthy. And to everyone involved in that rescue on Sunday, Christy Cloak, George McCullough in Cunanan in Kerry, well done. Dr. Maurice Quirk has been listening. He's in New Ross in Wexford. Maurice, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
You heard the story. Now, it's in Port Leisha. Unfortunately, it's a distance away. But can you help?
We'll try and help. If you can pass on our details to the lady involved, Joe, we'll see if we can help.
And do you do emergencies, do you?
We would treat emergencies every day, yeah.
Okay, and an 81-year-old, not saying most 81-year-olds now are hale and hearty, but an 81-year-old with underlying conditions, I don't want you to give a prognosis now, but would that normally present extra challenges?
Well, it always presents extra challenges if there are medical conditions involved. So we'd need to see what exactly the clinical situation was and assess as appropriate.
Okay, so if we, with your permission, pass on your number to the family.
Yes.
They can do a telephone consultation with yourself to begin with.
We can try and get a medical history and see what's going on and see if we can take it from there.
Okay, well done. Maurice Quirk. And are you on your own in Quirk Dental Surgeons?
No, there's myself and my wife.
Okay, well done. And really, I really appreciate this. It's August, it's holiday time. I understand a lot of people. The woman has been in terrible pain for over a week. So, Maurice, fingers crossed. And thank you indeed for contacting us. That's Maurice Quirk down in New Ross in County Wexford. John Morgan. John, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe.
You're back to the situation about ambulances. Go ahead. What's your situation?
Well, no, the first thing I've seen to your researcher, Joe, is I think it's like obviously the Dublin Fire Brigade organised the ambulances up there, but I think it's an awful pity that there isn't an ambulance based at all fire stations or nearly all fire stations in the country, you know, because I was doing a course with the National Learning Network to try and get jobs for people with disabilities. I'm a wheelchair user, and I was in the accessible toilet, and unfortunately I fell and I was knocked out for a minute or two, and then but when the ambulance came, now I live in Dundalk Town, so the hospital would be 6-7 minutes drive, and so waiting, and it took them 45 minutes, and when the ambulance driver came in, he said, "I'm very sorry, we came from Monaghan." I said, "Yeah, what?"
Yeah.
He said, "We came from Monaghan."
But even if the ambulance was stationed in a fire station, it doesn't mean it's there all the time. Now, I know your point would be fire stations are normally strategically located. They are in Dublin as
like
well.
Like in County Loud, we'd have one between RD that, you know, could potentially look after the middle of the county. And now, granted, we're the smallest county in Ireland, so maybe not suitably. But certainly with that in Carlingford. The Carlingford is at the end of the Cooley Peninsula, and it would be a half an hour's drive for an ambulance to get out to it.
You know, we had a communication from a paramedic supervisor in the National Ambulance Service. We can't get through to him at the minute. But he says, why do you think it's always Dublin Fire Brigade? Well, they are the front line. But I know, I keep mentioning, he said there is another ambulance service, the National Ambulance Service, which serves 26 counties. In the station he works in, there are 13 frontline ambulances, 8 elsewhere, 21 in all for the Dublin area. So he's saying there are 21 extra emergency ambulances in Dublin that can be used. So why aren't they used? He agrees it's a mess. It's a cluster, whatever the phrase is. He doesn't know why there's two services. Their paymaster is the HSE. Well, the paymaster is the taxpayer. The HSE also contract with Dublin Fire Brigade for their ambulance. Still, we can't get to the bottom of it. Okay, John Morgan, go to Mila Malka, produced by Annette Egan, researched by Richie Byrne, sound Jamie Doyle. Catherine Thomas next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.